Okay, so the next set is BattleTech Mercenaries, which came out in the summer of 1997 after the first World Championships. The expansion itself was 101 cards, and we've reviewed 10 command, 10 mechs, but only 8 missions. There are a lot less missions in this particular expansion, and that was also the theme for the following one, which was Mech Warrior. So in total, we're looking at 28 cards of the 101 set. Okay, quick reminder on the rating system. One is probably the worst rating possible. We suggest you feed that to your pet. Five is average, good enough in friendly play, and then just enjoy the card for what it is. And then we get into the 8, 9, category. Then they're excellent and possibly utilizable in a tournament. And 10 is you need to have one of these in your deck, if not more of them. Okay, so
And
first up we.
what was kind
Sorry.
of the general atmosphere or kind of receipt of this? It's coming on the back of Counter-Strike, which was definitely kind of the disappointment. And then do you guys remember kind of how this was received by the community? Was it kind of a new hope, as it were, for BattleTech?
Think generally the reception was better. They thought it was better than Counter-Strike. Obviously, there was a lot of hype with Worlds going on. There were a lot of rumors and comments flying around as well, but I'm not going to comment on that now because I know you've got a couple of special guests to talk to, and I'll let them deal with that.
Awesome.
So the people that like BattleTech were generally hyping for it and saw it as positive. Those people that may have been on the cusp and turned away generally didn't like it as much, obviously. But you start to see changes in the game. Counter-Strike was maybe a bit too formulaic and they didn't know what they were trying to do and just kept things simple. This, we start to see some divergence. They start to try and buff certain types of deck or focus on certain aspects of the game. And support that. So they were hoping, or my reading of it was that they were hoping to spread the deck meta. Basically, when you look at Worlds 97, then there were four Wolf decks, five Davian decks, and a Steiner deck in the top eight, and they wanted more diversity.
From my perspective, looking at the release of Mercenary, the quality of the cards, the general all quality playability of the cards is many percentage points higher than the playability of the cards that you see in Counter-Strike. So if I'm an 18, 19-year-old freshman, sophomore in college playing this game, I'm going to spend my $3 on a Mercenary pack long before I'm going to spend my $3 on a Counter-Strike pack and hope for a superior navigations, because the chance of that rare in Mercenaries being a playable rare that's going to be a fun card is going to be much higher by opening a Mercenary pack. So as far as like viability of a set, I think they're definitely up on the upswing, and it's only going to get better from there. When you think about power creep in card games, they did a lot better with increasing a couple of ticks of the quality of the cards and the desirability of certain cards in a deck, where Counter-Strike, very few and far between with regard to quality or desirability.
All right, so we got first up, Aletha Kabrinsky. Who wants to take this one?
It's my choice.
Awesome.
If you got the set notes, then the little bracket after the name tells you who picked it.
Yeah, that'll
I
go.
yeah, I chose Aletha. I don't have the depth of knowledge of the history that you guys have of all of the clan aspects, and I haven't read all of the books or even any of them, to be honest. But from what I understand, having talked to a few friends of mine and whatever else, that this is actually where the abilities of this person in the card have been replicated from some elements within the backstory themselves. And okay, fine, good move, guys. And also another Ghost Bear pilot. Thank you very much. This one has plus one initiative and plus one attack. Poor old Vlad didn't get his attack in the last expansion, but hey ho. And the ability of preventing three damage to the mech piloted by Aletha, if it's fast, is really, really good. it just screams, put her on a dragonfly and go and have some fun. And that plus one makes a world of difference because a lot of the dragonflies have got three damage. It saves you having to have the AP version of Dragonfly C. It saves you having to overheat on the Dragonfly D. Sorry, not D, B. And you can start killing resources with this. So she went straight into anybody's deck if they were playing Ghost Bear. Good card, for my opinion.
Yeah, and she's still tournament playable. I think she's an 8 or a 9 in the Ghost Bear deck that won Worlds, the last Worlds, in 2001. She was in there.
Awesome. Do we know what she piloted in the Allure, or what mechs?
Dasher.
Was it Dasher? Okay. All right. So a good start there. Let's move on. We have Difficult Terrain.
My pick again. Maybe I'm going a bit nostalgic. Mm-hmm. I picked this because it was the first terrain card. The terrains that have come out since, things like Rocky Gorge, Civilian Settlement, Fog Shrouded Moors, all very playable. But they all started here. And I think I had to play a little bit of a homage to their origins. The wording doesn't use terrain at that point. That then came later with, I think it was Arsenal where they started to use the terrain as a keyword. Mm. But then they got this one got rewritten in Commander's Edition, so you can see it there. And basically it says, play it on a site, mechs attacking that site are one speed lower. So this is a recognition of all of those fast hunting wolf decks and being able to block them without the reliance on the mongoose. Okay, mongoose changed later to Comstar only. But at the time, this was seen as a way of maybe slowing the clans down a bit. I'm not sure it worked, actually. I don't think many people played it, and it didn't really set the world on fire. But it paved the way for a number of very strong cards to follow in its wake.
I'm curious. I know with card games like this, there's a significant lag time between when they're designed and when they hit the market. And so I wonder, if this is a card that's targeted towards the, toward kind of bringing the clan speed down to make it a little bit more kind of playable against the Inner Sphere, because it would... My understanding is that usually design is three or four sets ahead of publishing. And so I wonder if this set was already designed when cards were on the table or not, or if this was kind of the first set that was designed after the game had been published and was out there on the market.
I'm going to speculate that it wasn't. I think Counter-Strike was on the table when they did Unlimited, and that's generally why they missed the mark. Hmm. I think this... because remember, early in the year, the Evil Dasher deck had been banned. They banned Effective Groundwork. Okay, that was separate. But they'd also banned Dasher D and Elite Met Warrior. And they saw speed being a serious problem. Whether this was put in at the start or whether it was put in late, I wouldn't like to say. But I would definitely say it was put in to try and curtail some of that activity.
I recognize it's not playable, Mark, in today's standards, but at the time when I saw this card in Mercenary come out, I recognized that you can put more than one enhancement on a stockpile. There is no scrap all other terrain cards in that region on the Mercenary's edition. You can lower the attack speed to slow with double difficult terrain. You can double the difficulty of the terrain if you're willing to pay that. So I did build a deck that had two difficult. You could put two difficult terrains on your stockpile, and then you could really have a chance against the clan. Again, not particularly effective today because playing a terrain card scraps all the other terrains in that region. But at the time, you could double the enhancement.
And would you do that over like a perimeter alarm, which seems like it does the same thing?
Well, this can't be scrapped. There's no way to get rid of it.
I think perimeter alarm can't be scrapped. It's one of the interesting things, if I recall.
Isn't it?
It's not like point defense.
Can you redirect for perimeter alarm? I don't remember. And then the buyout, isn't the buyout of perimeter alarm different? This
it does cost. Buyout. It does cost. Yeah. So perimeter alarm is plus 2A4L. So the L is prohibited, but yeah, there's no way to get rid of it once it's on there, the table. which seems odd, but
yeah. Creative terraforming is the answer to terrain now. Isn't that right, Mark?
Well, it's quite interesting because the original card was just picked as an enhancement, which is why you could multi-stack them. And then it was rewritten and terrains replaced each other. I think, if I remember rightly, the wording on the terrain basically says that you can scrap all other enhancements on the site, which means actually you might end up getting rid of point defense system, but I'd have to go and read it. Neither tends to be played.
Yeah. Scrap all the other terrain cards in that region.
Okay, so they've changed it.
Yeah.
That the creative terraforming can also get rid of your point defense system.
Yeah, and I think Death Commando can get rid of it as well.
Yeah, but you know, this is where it started. I think is the point here. Maybe it's not the great card, but actually it's the origins of a number of great cards.
Awesome. So next up we have Disguise Coordinates. So we'll read that out. Mark, you want to read that out?
Which version would you like? Because I've included both.
Let's take the Commander's Edition because I don't have that one in front of me.
Okay. Actually, we might go for both.
Are they both viable?
Read the original.
I'll read the original first.
Okay.
Scrap Disguise Coordinates when it's revealed. You may activate Disguise Coordinates only when an opponent attacks. Until the end of turn, and that's important, you may redirect any attack to any site you control other than the stockpile. So basically, you can say what he attacks.
Scrap heap, Mark, other than the scrap heap.
Yes.
Not stockpile, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So you can determine where this goes. Now, if we think back to our field construction site, which is a 5-3, 5 armor, and you're coming across with 2 dashers, I might just redirect it to that and you can't kill it. I might direct it to a card into construction that I might have 6 counters on or 8 counters on. And providing it's not a scrap when revealed, I'll just turn it over and lose the counters. So this card is actually, well, arguably abusable. Yes, it was the basis for the Mechless deck. There is a deck that will play without any mechs in that basically uses this to divert mechs all over the place and then build up a huge bombing card, normally Corridor of Fire, because the counter to damage ratio is 1 counter to 1 damage. It's the only card that does that directly. All your other bombing cards are 2-1. And again, that was in one of these Mech Warrior or Mercenary sets. So it's
Mech Warrior, I'm pretty
sure. And you can see the power creep where it's going from 2 counters to 1 counter in order to improve it. And in the following year, the Mechless 98, sorry, the World's 98, Mechless came 7th. And to my mind, if it hadn't have drawn the person it drew in the quarterfinals, it probably would have won. You can guess who the person it drew was.
Peter Sundholm?
Yes. playing his Boom Wolf, which is incredibly strong against Mechless. Boom Wolf was one of the best things to counter Mechless. If he'd have pulled Terry or Yik, I'm pretty sure that Mechless would have beaten him for a number of reasons. We can explore the deck in the next review of Mech Warrior maybe. But at this point, this was the basis for that deck. And it was banned after that World's 98 because they said it was not thematic to have a non-mech deck.
Wait, say that again? That it was banned that you couldn't have a mechless deck?
Yes.
They didn't like you playing control in Battletech. Basically, this is the control player's card. If you're a blue player in Magic the Gathering, you're going to play this type of a card because it's all control. When your stockpile is your life and you can redirect any attack your opponent throws at you to any other card out there that's a legal target other than your stockpile, you're playing control. And that's just not the way Wizards of the Coast wanted or DCI wanted you to be playing Battletech.
That's fascinating. I'll definitely be asking Peter about that and this game as well, because from what I've seen online from his Magic, he's a blue control player. but that'd be
I think my point here is that if you didn't want people to play like that, why put the card in the game to start with?
Yeah, it just seems very odd. Well, what was the rule?
Why would you reprint a banned card? Mark, what were they thinking? They reprinted this in Commander's Edition.
Is the card banned? Is that what?
Yeah, it's banned.
Oh, okay.
And they printed it again.
Yeah. The problem was that people were reading the area that said any other site you control other than the scrap heap. So they were sending them all over the place to invalid targets and stuff because it wasn't clear. So they rewrote it even though it was banned. Yes.
All right, so let's move on from that oddity. Hidden reserves.
It's a 10. Just so you know, it's a 10. It's a 10.
It's a 10. Yes.
Well, that's we made clear, right? If things get banned, it's because they were a 10.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it's fixable.
What's your fix, Mark?
Well, a lot of people say turn it into one mission, and I say if you do that, then people aren't going to play it, and you're in exactly the same position. The ability to be able to control more than multiple attacks. And if people know that you're playing that deck and it's only one mission, then they're going to use that to their advantage. I would say pay the 3 cost, and for every counter above, you may redirect one mission. And that actually makes it quite interesting because you've got to guess how many missions the other guy is going to pay for, or you're going to put all your resources into it. Now, if you're putting all your resources into it, you're not building up that big corridor of fire to kill the other guy. So I think that would be something I would suggest that would be worth experimenting with and see how that played. The other reason or the other criteria for card banning is that a particular deck will win in a tournament standard environment 80% of the time. And it's close to it. Like any deck, it had its strengths and it had its weaknesses.
Peter was a bad thing for it.
Yeah, I think he would have won.
Peter played the same deck every time.
What do you mean?
Peter played Boom Wolf every time he went to Worlds.
Gotcha. Now, you know, for Arata on this, you know, what do you think instead of going to, if for the counters over, if instead of saying to attack to any site you control, just attack to a site. So you can just say you cannot attack this particular site, or if you try, then I get to pick. I mean, now that I think about it, that just means you can't attack that one site without.
Well, it just means that site happens to be an assembly with 15 counters on it.
Yeah.
So.
All right, so next one up, we got Hidden Reserves.
Another of my choices, I'm afraid. It's a staple in a free deploy deck. Basically, it's a 1+3L card, and basically says scrap when revealed and draw 3 cards. It's a draw engine, very, very simply. And with free deploy, you throw out your mechs, you refresh your hand, you drop out all those mechs again, you refresh your hand. This is the engine that allows you to draw those mechs and cards in order to keep dropping them and maintain them. It's pretty cheap at one cost for 3 cards. The only thing to be wary of is that you can actually draw yourself to death. As Gustav often says, your stockpile is your life. If you keep drawing cards, then you're sacrificing something for those cards.
It seems like, from my novice perspective, that, you know, it'd be good to have at least kind of one of these in most decks, you know, because there's definitely points where I'm getting deeper into the game where I might only have like one or two cards in my hand because I've been playing missions. You know, is that kind of a valid insight there or way of thinking, you know, from the kind of beginner point of view? Just to kind of try to replenish that hand at some point.
I know what you're saying. With the L buyout, 4 for 3 cards, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on your deck. I mean, if I've got 2 cards in my hand, but I've actually played 3 missions that have been very successful, then I'm thinking, well, actually, I've got good value for money. When would I have played them that didn't get that value for playing the card? And you can refresh your hand. I know Michael says if you start with 5, you should end with 5. But
Hell, no, he said that you should start with two, right? If you
five cards.
Oh, okay.
You start with five cards in your hand, you should end with five cards in your hand, and therefore you should have a draw engine. Yes, maybe, but if I win the game having spent four of my five cards and I win in five turns, mm-hmm. then I'm going to spend them.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to worry about replacing them because I'm on that winning track. I'm hitting your stockpile, and I guess
I'm still coming from that perspective where my girlfriend and I play, and our games are like 45 minutes long, and so we're not quite in that win in 20 minutes, you know, six rounds, you know, point in our development yet.
That's the tournament play. This is why this is an 8 or a 9. I would actually rein it a 9 for tournament play because in decks that are free to play, and you look at a lot of the free to play units, going back to that spider that we looked at before, that was revised. That's a logistics unit, and a lot of the free-to-play units, Hollander, I'm looking at you, have logistics. The Yellow Jacket has logistics. So you're going to have logistics in a free-to-play deck, and you're going to want to be able to refresh your hand because all those units are so cheap, but they're costing your hand size. In a Big Mech deck or in a Boom Wolf deck, this is not what you're looking at. You're looking at for damage in a quick turnaround, and you're not just dumping your hand every turn. So I would rather have a Black Market Connections than I would a Hidden Reserves, because I could dump those two resources that I've picked up and get back one of those great missions for pushing the envelope or getting the overrun to get a kill or get the game over at the last push.
Gotcha. All right, so we rated that an 8.
Possibly a 9 from Gus.
I'd rank it a 9. It's an amazing card in competitive play today.
Awesome. All right, next one, love. Good stuff. This is your pick, so why don't you...
Absolutely. Sandhurst Royal Military Academy. It is currently a 9. It's one of the top 5 competitive deck designs for Comstar only. Comstar is its own faction. That's fine. You can still use it in the Alliance deck if you want to have access to all of the Inner Sphere houses. But it is an amazing card. That gives ongoing value at +2 attack, individual missions, VTOL. You're getting +2 attack every single mission on unit, and it untaps over and over again. And currently, you can even get the bonus on a piloted unit if you're playing pilots as well. The ability to keep a unit alive defensively when you have initiative, you can give it the bonus to armor. Extremely versatile card. Logistics and politics mean that you're probably playing a free deploy type style of deck with a bunch of those low cost units, refilling your hand with, like we said before, that hidden reserves. At the time, I'd give it a 9 or a 10 even, and it's still a 9. It's one of those god cards that Wizards of the Coast printed, just because it breaks the rule that most of these command cards that you're looking at are only going to give you their bonus once per turn. Once per phase. This, you can have the bonus over and over and over again. You're just limited by the number of units you have, which is why, again, it synergizes with free deploy. Fantastic card.
Now, in our previous conversation, Michael had suggested kind of eroding this or restricting it. Do you think that to kind of get this, bring this kind of more so it's not as overpowered and a little bit kind of more balanced in play, would you suggest doing something like that? Or how would you see
it? I don't think it needs an errata. I think there should be strong cards in the meta. This is a strong card. It's appropriately costed at 4 plus 5 politics plus 2 logistics. So you could be paying as much as 11 for this card if you don't have the buyouts. Yeah. It only has 2 armor, 3 structure. So it can be scrapped and hunted. It does give damage back. I like the 3 back. So it'll kill the couple of dashers. If the dashers go after it, it'll kill at least one of them. But I think it's appropriate to have cards like this in the game, especially when it's a Comstar only. So right. Comstar needs boosts.
Sneaky boosts, sneaky overpowered ones. Very thematic.
They do. What do you think? What do you think, Mark?
I think this is the card if you picked one from every, or you picked one from the entire game that divides us. I know it's a 10 because of the way it is. I know that you say that it breaks the mold, and that's fine. I would say that this is a contract card that breaks the mold on two counts. First, that there is no 0-2p buyout on it. Secondly, that you have to scrap it instead of it only receiving 5 damage, which most contracts do. Third, it doesn't go to the other player's hand. Okay, I think when you compare it to other contracts, then the 2 and the 3 armor are reasonably fair. I think the 3 damage is a bit overkill. And principally, it doesn't sit well with me. It's not my type of card. It's a bit cheesy deck. Whoever heard of Serrano with 13 armor beating on a stockpile or 13 attack, which is what it does. I look at the card, and a little while ago, I thought that actually it should have been unique. Because when you look at the card, the keywords are in the wrong order. They are in the order of Command, Comstar, Inner Sphere. If you look at any unique, then the unique keyword comes before Inner Sphere. And I thought that there was a reasonable chance that it was originally unique and they changed it at last moment and all they did was replace unique with Comstar. I think actually it's a wider issue, and if you look at all the Comstar cards in Mercenaries, Anastasius Fock being one of them, I think Mindo Waterley's in there as well, they all have the Comstar keyword in the wrong order. So I'm not sure what they were thinking there. It is, for me, power creep, undeniably, and I think this card actually went too far. I think they did too much to it. That's my personal opinion. I think it's a Marmite card, as we would call it, say, in the UK. You either love it or you loathe it. And my final thing is, I live in the UK and there's only one Sandhurst Royal Military Academy, not 6 of them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Or even Comstar unique. I mean, do you think it'd be fine if it was Inner Sphere unique without the Comstar? You think, you know?
Well, the problem here is if you make it unique, then you're probably going to kill the deck archetype. Mm. Yep. And I hate to do that. I don't want to do that.
It's going to rely on black market connections, right? You know, to get reliability if it was unique.
No. You want to have 3 or 4 of them. You want 3 or 4 of them in the deck, so you can get.
No, plus. I'm saying if it was unique. I'm saying in order. If it was unique, then you would need to have that black market to pull it out of the deck, right?
Hasty Alliance to pull it out of the deck.
Okay. Well, one of two options. There is a variant on the deck that Gus has talked about. You run 6. There is a Slowhurst variant that actually only runs 1 Sandhurst. The idea being that you fill the board with lots and lots of cheap units, 2s and lower costs, things like your Saladins, your Centurions, your Hunchbacks and stuff like that, and stifle the game area. And you either stifle the opponent with more and more mechs, but if you need to deliver the final blow, instead of doing Blitzkrieg, you attack one unit at a time. And when he's all tapped out or he doesn't block, you use your Sandhurst and give yourself +2 on everything. Given that good shooting is +2 on a mech, is that card the equivalent of how many missions?
Right.
It's a 10.
It's an exceptionally 100% good card. 100% a 10. It's an exceptionally good card. And okay, I don't like it, but I know it's a good card. And I have to respect that.
Gotcha. And we have a combo that you guys wanted to talk about too.
This was the list in the set notes are actually a comparison for the keywords, placement of the Comstar keyword. Being in most cases where the unique keyword is. It'll be in the set notes, so you can have a look at that if you want. I just pulled a few out at random.
Got it.
All right, so, another command card coming up.
Yep.
This is mine, Strip Mining Operations. It's a resource. It's not clan or Inner Sphere. You can put it in either type of deck, and this is a ramp card. When you're thinking about ramping up to those bigger units, faster strip mining operations allows it. Because when you think, I'm drawing two cards and I'm making two deployments per turn, am I going to put two resources down and one card under construction, try to build that up later? Or can I put two resources down and a unit to build? Well, strip mining allows you to do the latter. It saw a great effect in that unofficial world champion, that 2001 Ghostbearer Dragonfly Elemental deck. It uses a free deployment mechanic. And because of that, it pairs well with Hidden Reserves. It's got the logistics buyout. I rank it an 8. It's competitive. It still sees play. It's a fantastic card in a ramp deck. You want to be playing those big fatties? This will get it there faster.
Gotcha.
From my point of view, I think this is a well-designed card. When you look at it, it's 1/2L. It works with free deploy. Great. But it's also paying a penalty for that. It's a 2/5, which means it's more susceptible to damage. It's got no attack. You can tap it for a resource, and it's a free deploy. It is ramp deck material. It's a good card. It's well designed. It's an 8 for me.
Awesome.
Next one up, we have a unique, one of the unique personas. This particular individual, Sun Tzu Lao, he's got some messed up siblings, and his dad's messed up too, but man, they work well together. He is part of the card advantage lock engine that's out there with regard to Subterfuge. He was reprinted in Commander's Edition so that he has more versatility. The Mercenary Vision says take a Subterfuge card from the top of your scrap heap and put it in your hand. So you're looking at timing back when Mercenaries first came out, because if there was anything but a Subterfuge card on the top of your scrap heap, he really did nothing for you. Well, you're looking at Commander's Edition, you can take any Subterfuge card from your scrap heap. So you're playing a Subterfuge heavy deck, you've got Sun Tzu out, you've got Max's Legacy out, you're recycling those Subterfuge cards every single turn. Whether that's a Misfire of Commands, whether that's Manipulation of Romano, whatever you need to do, he can do it for you, and he can do it better than anybody else, better than Black Market Connections, because it costs nothing, better than Melissa. If Subterfuge is your game, Sun Tzu is your guy to play it with. He is, however, susceptible to the Arrow 4. He's the one of the standard ones we're looking at where the structure on these command cards is 1. I rank him a 7 in the Nietzsche Leo Dirty Tricks deck.
I think if you go with the Commander's Edition version, then he's a little higher than that for me, probably an 8. The update in CE definitely made him much more playable. Compare him to Melissa, you know, tap, scrap a card, return one from your scrap heap. She's a 2/2P. He's a little more expensive than that, arguably. But if you go in Subterfuge deck, then this guy that does not look very happy at all is something that you need to consider. And that pairing with the Legacy, which basically means you can pay that card for free, is very powerful. It's just hard to pull. Great card. 8.
Yeah. Everybody loves bribe pilots. Everybody loves free bribe pilots even more.
Cost you less.
Cost you less.
I like, for personalities, the art on this looks good. A lot of the personalities are kind of questionable, but I think this one is a solid little portrait there. And this kind of makes me think about back to Oda, you know, with the 5/1. I'm starting to become more convinced that they just accidentally flipped those numbers on that card as a misprint. All right, next, Mark, you're up. Targeting Ace.
I have to say again, I let Gus choose first, and to be honest, I'm quite happy to do that. I went for this as one for you missile fans, and try and accommodate all tastes. It's a pilot that allows you to modify your missile die rolls, and in that respect, he's a pilot. You may add or subtract 1 from the die roll for each missile fired from a mech piloted by Targeting Ace. Okay, use this ability immediately after rolling the dice. Well, if you think about Narc, which is just you can subtract 1, he's a Narc on steroids. And all of a sudden, if you've got a mech with Narc, thinking about Ryokan D, with this guy on it, then every missile that's between 5 and 2 is definitely going to score a 3, and your 1s are going to score a 2. So he's definitely a way to up the damage value of anybody playing with missiles, if you like that kind of thing. Personally, I'm not the greatest fan of missiles. They're notoriously unreliable. This is a way of giving yourself a bit more reliability at the expense of paying for it. I think the only thing I'd say is, as a pilot, he doesn't give you any initiative. But then the die roll ability is quite powerful. Great card, just not for a great deck. Five.
Yeah, he's a three in my book, but he does pair well with Ryokan D and a retrofitted missile rack. So, I mean, in the right deck, you can make a missile boat and you can make it do a whole lot of damage to a stockpile. The problem is those Ryokan Ds are subject to hunt down. They're only medium speed, and it's a whole lot of investment. Three cards to make a missile boat. I rank the entire missile deck concept as subpar. It's a tier three at best, and this guy makes it a little bit more viable. So if that's your game, go for it. If not, I can see why you want to be competitive. You're not playing missiles.
Yeah. So coming up, Gustav, you have another card, Underworld Connections.
Yeah, Underworld Connections is a really interesting card design in that it's a command inner sphere only. They don't use the Yakuza out there in Clan World. It's a zero-cost, non-resource command card, but it operates as a resource. You can place any counter on a card with two counters of the same type. So you have at least one counter on a card under construction. You can basically use it as a resource and put two counters, remove that one and put two down. Now, when you're thinking about a sneaky Leo subterfuge deck and you're looking at misrouted commands, that's fantastic. It was errated in Counter-Strike, and now it's choose any card in play.
Commander's Edition.
Or Commander's Edition. Choose any card in play or under construction. Replace one counter on that card with two counters of the same type. Use this ability only during your deploy phase. So you used to be able to put this, you can put one counter on top of their stockpile, because that's a card, and you could double up with suicide troops. They errated this in the Commander's Edition, and so it doesn't work quite as well, but it's still a sneaky card. It's arrow four bait, but it can kill a dasher if the dasher runs at it. So I rank it a five.
I think it's 0-1. It's an anything bait.
Anything bait. That's true.
Unless you're running a dart.
Or isn't there a Koshi out there that's an wait, it's got AP.
It's
right?
Got AP. Yeah.
Yeah. Even the Koshi can kill it.
Yeah. Interesting card, interesting design. You need a deck that uses some sort of counter. We talked about Hip Shattered in the previous one. That could make that, but if you think about
Trapped
is the one that arguably you could turn into something quite nasty in that respect. One of those cards that you keep in the back of your mind and think, might just help.
Yeah. Let's talk about Vander Von. Coming up next, Vander Von Chistu. Do you get where's he in the lore? I'm not familiar. I haven't read far enough to.
He's the Sakan of Clan Jade Falcon. He's arrow four bait at a 3-1-1. But just when you're looking at the source material to game realization, they hit the money on the head with Aletha, and he is really not quality at all. At four cost with 5p buyout, you're paying 9 for the ability to restock the top card of your scrap heap and put it back underneath your deck. So he is giving you one life per turn for 4 cost. There's no time in the game that I am going to not want a unit to block and save my scrap heap a lot more damage than one per turn. Yeah. He's just really 100% a cat fodder. I will feed this card to my cat. He's a terrible rare to pull. I rank him a 2.
I'm surprised you rank him a 2. I'd have thought you'd have gone for a 1. Personally, I would agree with the 2 because I think he takes his beard styling tips from Travis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the only reason he's a 2.
Yeah, he does have a nice beard. There you go. He's a terrible card.
Yeah. Okay. What were they thinking?
All right, you guys want to soldier on? We want to get through missions or we want to... What's up? All right.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so let's dive into missions.